right, welcome into another edition of Shock and Chip. I'm Wes Blankenship, DJ Shockley, Mike Bilbo, also joining me. And guys, it's May, and we're recording on Cinco de Mayo. And
hey,
and the draft has just gone by.
Shock, tell us what you were. Before we started recording, Shock, tell us what your wife wanted to make.
So every Cinco de Mayo, I have come up with a signature drink, and last couple years, one that's been very popular is something I have coined the phrase a shockerita. And okay. It's not your regular margarita, it's a shockerita because it's gonna shock you and put you on your ass. That's what it does. So my wife, before we came on, she was like, so you're just gonna wait till after the podcast? I gotta wait a whole hour before I can start getting into these ritas. I was like, babe,
before I can start getting into these
ritas, the longer you wait, the better they gonna be.
We're gonna put that in the description this week. This week's podcast cut to a half hour due to Mrs. Shockley's request.
So ready to get to the ritas, man. That's all I know.
Is this a secret recipe in the rita?
Yeah.
All right.
I just show up with it. And this is what's so crazy. Last year we had a neighbor come over, and we were just in the neighborhood, and I was like, "Hey, man, you want to try one of these ritas?" I gave him one. He was stuck. So today, I promise you, at 11:15, he said, "Hey, man, I'm about to go on my walk here in a minute. You got any of them ritas ready to go?" I said, "Nah. No readers just yet." So,
the shock readers. I don't think you can get it. I mean, that is a true next level if you're getting into it before noon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying I've never done it.
It's single
demand. I'm just saying it's next level.
Yeah, who amongst us has not?
It's a reason for you to have a couple drinks.
Anybody, any companies do anything stupid and borderline racist on Twitter today?
I don't know.
Usually somebody gets loose and does something they gotta walk back, but I haven't seen anything today.
I've not been
very online today.
I haven't either. I think brands have just learned by now, like, I would rather just not tweet out or just take our scheduled tweets off. Let's not do anything that's gonna rub anybody the wrong way.
I feel like there's somebody that just had my advice is just don't ever tweet. Ever.
Tweeting ain't
honestly,
bad.
Man.
Sometimes people make it mad. Wes is a professional
what I would tell
tweeter,
young,
though.
That's what I would tell any young journalist is don't get a Twitter because it's an illusion.
You
don't need it. You don't need it. You will be a better journalist. You will be a better reporter if you don't have Twitter. It's the greatest illusion in the world.
Why?
Because you follow false things? Stupid. No, I mean, like, you can't get yourself in trouble, you know? You just do your work. All of your work goes through an editor. Twitter, you're your only editor, man. So at least have a strong sense of what you can say and not say without getting fired. It's just you're only it's like a recruit, you know? How many kids have we seen lose a scholarship offer because of a dumb tweet? It's just you're only getting yourself
wrong with
in
your
trouble.
Dog, bro? What's the deal?
I don't know. Shit, dog! God!
That dude is going hammer time. You ain't giving him no read today, have you?
He's trying to get in those readers.
He want to get in the room or something.
Hey, all I know is there is nothing funnier to me than local news bros and brosettes who are trying to increase their social profile because they know that that's the only thing the news director pays attention to now and doesn't really care about the job they do on the air.
Yep.
And I'll tell you what, you want to talk about a minefield? Son? Yep.
Well, hell, if you're in sports.
Clickbait is a thing, right? Clickbait is a thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a sports reporter, that's all you get. I mean, you're not going to be on TV, so you better be online doing something good. So.
You get your 1 minute a night.
That's the trap.
I remember back in the day. I remember back in the day we used to get, and when I was in Tulsa, we used to get 4 minutes, man.
Four.
4 minutes.
Wow.
Dude, they barely on there, what, a minute and a half, 2 minutes now?
Yeah.
And that's but then if it's a if there's a cloud or the wind blows, you're down to like 30 seconds.
Oh. Weather takes precedence over everything, huh?
Precisely. Yes, the weather. The meteorologist. I mean, this past week, you get it.
That is less than 50% right. Gets precedence, huh?
Hey, I have respect for most meteorologists, and I'll just tell you, they're in control. They're the ones that run the show over there, man, because that's the only reason people are still tuning in to local
news. What are they in control of?
Everything.
The broadcast.
Everything.
Really?
The broadcast. Yep. Yes.
Really?
Yes. 100%.
The weatherman is like the most important
100%. DJ, they're saving lives.
100%.
No.
I'm not.
This is
not
real life.
Jaded about this at all, but.
Well, I am.
The only reason. Well, you worked in Oklahoma. So, yeah, of course you're jaded.
Yeah.
But the only reason that people really, really tune in on television, you pick up the remote and punch in the number of the channel that you're going to go to, the only reason people still tune into that, by and large, is for live weather reports. And the meteorologists know this, man. They've got it down. They've got all the power in the newsroom, guaranteed.
Oh, and don't let a little tornado or storm come through. It is... Oh, it don't matter what's on TV, they is cutting in. That's the only thing that be killing me. They be cutting in.
Yep.
They gonna get their time, I see. So I guess they are.
And depending on your depending on your affiliate or whatever your station has, you know, I worked at one station where the meteorologist would cut in, and don't call them a weatherman or a weather girl. They're a meteorologist, okay?
No.
The meteorologist would cut in for severe weather.
They're scientists.
We would get emails. We'd get calls. Why'd you cut into the Andy Griffith Show? Or why'd you cut into Jeopardy? That is all people care about.
How am I supposed to watch Star Search?
Do not get in the way of my Jeopardy or my wheel. Or my Wheel of Fortune. Like clockwork, man.
My stories. I got to watch my stories. You got that Scott Howard internet tonight, man.
Yeah, I'm over at my parents for a couple nights, and it is not good.
There you
it
go.
It is not
there
ideal.
We go. Wes, hey everybody, Wes is running from the law.
Yeah. If you ain't seen him, guess what? Or just find him at your local barbecue joint talking about what's the burger you had last week?
Last week, what I have? Oh, okay. I went to Cafe Racer in Crawford, Georgia. Highly
Cafe
recommend
Racer.
It. Yep. Okay. And this is a non-sponsored
highly
part of the show. Yeah. But you gotta get your order in
what
early.
What's the name
That's
of that burger?
See if we can get it, if we can somehow get away for Wes's one job to sponsor his other job. That would be perfect. DJ, if Falcons want to buy like a sponsorship on Shock and Chip.
Oh man.
Shock, tell us
Wes,
about the draft,
man. You're looking at the window like you're waiting for people to pull up on you.
I got my computer monitor off to the side tonight. I'm trying a different weapon.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not like nervously looking out the window or anything. But no.
He's waiting for the cops to roll
that's
up.
That's what you it guys, looks like, bro. I'm just saying. Every about
this is
eight
the only,
to 10 seconds.
When I look over here,
right.
When I look over here, it's the only place I can see y'all. Okay, so it's the only place I can see you guys.
Oh yeah, look at that! Look at that!
Ooh, so hey, that's
you're. I think we're right at the very structural limit of your headphone cable.
One more tug, yep. And you're gonna be in trouble around the neckline, buddy.
I got the cans on.
All right, first let's talk about who picked the number one dog to go off the board first. It was me.
Surprising.
Yeah, good
that
job.
Was it. Really surprising.
You know what that was? That was 100%. That was 100% the contrarian pick. You know, if everybody's going one way, go the other way. You got to go out on a limb if you want to pick the sweetest fruit.
I mean, you could have went for Tyson. I mean, but you chose Stokes, so there was something to that.
Yeah. Fast, man. Speed kills.
No doubt. No doubt. I was surprised. I ain't going to lie. I thought Aziz would be go first, obviously. He didn't. But I think Stokes to Green Bay, man. That's gonna be. I don't know if he's ready for that cold, but
no. I don't know if he's ready for whoever's gonna be playing quarterback.
Yeah, who's playing quarterback?
Oh, it ain't gonna be.
Who's
Aaron
he gonna
Rodgers?
Be practicing against?
Jordan Love better be ready. It ain't gonna Aaron's be
Aaron
Rodgers.
Aaron's gonna hang it up and go do Jeopardy full time.
Bro, I told somebody today, I said, if y'all look at this man's track record from this man don't care about his family, he will cut them off as he has done. And you look at his personal relationships, he don't care what she look like, whatever. If she ain't did, if she did something he ain't like, guess what? She cut off, she gone. So this man said he ain't coming back. That man gonna hold a grudge. So if he come back, it'd be a miracle. But I think this dude is gone with the wind.
All right. I know everyone was tuning in to hear what we thought about.
Back? I don't know. I mean, I know a lot of money in them.
Mm-hmm. Well, Shock, tell me what you experienced in the draft. You were plugged in behind the scenes with the Falcons a little bit. How'd it go? What did you learn?
So it was actually pretty nerve-wracking, man, because obviously everybody was looking at what's going to happen at three. They take Trey Lance. So I think that was the other guy that the Falcons were really strong on. Like, if he's there at four, there was a real chance that they could have pulled the trigger on Trey Lance. But when you go and you get dude was arguably the second best player in the entire draft, you can't pass the dude up. And then all the noise came out about Julio, and Julio ain't going to be on the team come August. You had to find somebody that could bring some production. So I think that's where Kyle Pitts came in. Mm-hmm. And the only other surprise was I was surprised Jamar Chase went fifth. You know, I thought they would take an offensive lineman to protect old Joe Burrow. But they said, hey, 2019 was magical for LSU, and that dude balled out. So they trying to rekindle some of that love. So it was cool, though, man. I think all the big talk was the quarterbacks and where he was going to go. I know everybody wanted to see where Justin would go and end up going to the Bears at 11. I thought people thought he had a chance to come to Atlanta, but I don't think the Falcons really had their toe in that water. I think it was either Pitts or Trey Lance, to be honest.
Yeah, how about they unite Burrow with Chase? They unite Tua with Waddle.
Tua.
Yeah, a lot of that going on. Trevor with Etienne, is that right? Didn't they do that in Jacksonville?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, they in did. Philly. Philly too, Mike. They put Devontae in Philly.
Jalen Hurts.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
How'd you feel?
Actually, three guys, because they drafted the guy that played center too. Can't remember his name, but they had
Landon Dickerson.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think that's a strategy?
I'll be honest, though. I think sometimes, I don't think all the time. I think, like, with a quarterback and a wideout, yes, I think it's a strategy. With a quarterback and a receiver, maybe. But, I mean, if you go back and pull the numbers, I'd be interested to know how many times Hurts threw to him.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, you know, yeah.
Because
that part was overblown.
Hurts have been gone 2 years. 2 years plus, was it 2 years plus the Oklahoma year?
Yeah,
Hurts was with, like, the Judy crew. Like, you know, they're all together. Exactly. Like Judy.
Yeah.
That was more of his guys.
The Burrow thing, maybe. The Burrow. I mean, I think the Burrow thing was more a case of trying to replace A.J. Green.
Yeah. Right.
Or making an attempt to replace A.J. Green. Replacing A.J. Green isn't that easy.
Mm-hmm. Mike, how did you feel about Philly, though? How did you feel about him taking old Devontae?
I had no problem with it.
Yeah.
I had no problem with it. They needed a receiver. They needed a receiver who didn't drop the ball. And I think that was one of the, if you go and you look at, like, the advanced stats that they did, he was very good as far as ball security and holding on to it. If you get it to him, if it hits him in the hands, he's going to catch it. A little concerned about his size, but I don't know if you saw the – it might have been a Nike ad or somebody, but it was basically said, I've had people been concerned about my size my entire career. Why would that be any different?
Yeah.
I think it's a good pick. I'll be honest, the guy I would have picked is sitting in the black and red of the Falcons right now.
Mm.
Because he's the best player I saw last year.
Yeah.
And that includes Trevor Lawrence. Now, I know it's different with a receiver and a quarterback, but you looking for a guy that's going to make a big impression right off the bat, I think you're going to see more out of Pitts earlier than you're going to see Trevor Lawrence.
No doubt.
Now, Trevor Lawrence might be a generational guy that's there for 15 years. I still think you're going to look back at the Pitts pick and think it was big time.
Well, that's why they had to go to get him, because this dude is more than just a tight end. They can line this dude up anywhere on the field, and he can win versus anybody. And that's day one, like you said, coming in having value. And I think that's going to be huge. I mean, it's going to take a couple years for you know, to build around Trevor, and that's just the reality of it. So it's going to be.
And
it's
I'm sure if I were the Jaguars, I would have probably drafted some sort of combination cardiologist or brain surgeon, so that when things start getting ugly down there, you're in great shape.
How about the?
Do I need to edit? Do I need to edit that?
Nah.
Do I need to edit that out?
Nah.
Do I need to edit that out?
No. Because we have a Florida Gator guest on the show tonight, so it all levels.
That's right,
out.
We do. That's right.
So how about the dogs drafted though, guys? 9, the most in program history. 4 straight
love
years
it.
With the first rounder, and 6 linebackers in the last 4 years. This is from Saturday Down South. I'm just reading off their tweet to sum it all up, but. I'll just go in order. Eric Stokes, Tyson Campbell, Aziz, Monty Rice, Ben Cleveland, Trey McKitty, who has a pretty interesting Georgia career, but he made the most of it. Georgia gets to count them. Trey McKitty in the draft picks.
to get him to go in the third round, and he went in the third round? I was like, what?
LeCount, Trey Hill,
fellas.
And Mark Webb. So, pretty good haul for the Dogs.
So here's where it's huge for Kirby, because now he starts to go into these houses with these recruits and talk to these kids and say, look, this is what we're putting out. And it's what the other programs in the SEC have been doing. The ones that have been at the top, we know who those are, have been doing it for years. And now I think we can go into those rooms and say, hey, this is what we did this past year. These are the amounts of guys that we're putting out every single year. And I guarantee you, because I remember going down and doing a couple games, doing a game in Tuscaloosa. And soon as you walk in the building, I mean, soon as you walk in, there's pictures galore of all these dudes that played in the NFL. Like, it is the little first thing you see if you're an 18-year-old kid coming to, or 17, whatever you may be, coming there and you're getting recruited by a school. That's the first thing you see. And it's remarkable how many guys are getting drafted. And for Georgia to have 9, that is huge. And to see guys going early, to seeing, I mean, you got 4 of your secondary guys get drafted in Mark Webb, Stokes, Campbell, and LeCount. I mean, that's crazy, your whole secondary. Mm-hmm. Middle linebacker, Monty Rice, goes in the third round to Mike Vrabel over there in Tennessee. I mean, that's an awesome spot for him. I mean, I think all these positions are good. Aziz gets to go back with Lorenzo Carter in New York. Like, these are good spots for these dudes, man. So I'm happy for them, man.
The Giants love the Dogs.
I think it's interesting. I was trying to remember this. Coach Rick's last year that we had one guy got drafted?
Isaiah.
That was the wideout.
McKenzie.
That went to Buffalo, right?
Isaiah McKenzie.
Yeah. And you go from there, and now you look at where you are. You're at 9.
Yeah. And I think this is what is expected.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're going out getting all these 4 or 5-star guys and you're considered one of the top programs in the country, this is what is expected.
Yeah. Awesome to see. Just awesome to see a steady, like, continuous drip of Dogs going throughout the draft. I mean, like you said, Shock, that's what the program's supposed to be. It's no surprise. I mean,
and how about,
specifically with Stokes, okay? There's that narrative out there that from rivals that Kirby can't develop his talent. I mean, nobody wanted Stokes. And he goes first round. You know? How can you say
Dude came to Georgia as a running back.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, if that's not development.
And somebody turned him into a first round draft pick.
Yeah. I mean, come on. That's,
now, I know.
The staff did.
And all credit to him, because he worked his you know what off.
For sure.
No doubt.
But
for sure.
He obviously had some help.
Yep. No doubt.
Yeah. The linebacker picks, too.
How about Mike, you got our Jamie Newman went to Philly, huh? You saw that?
Yeah, I did see that. I did see that. And I believe he's already stayed there longer than he stayed in Athens. I wanted to. I'll be honest. You remember those shirts that came out when Brett Favre signed with Minnesota? That was like his. It was like his silhouette, and it said, "We'll never forget you, Bert." I wanted to do one of those with Jamie Newman. Like, we'll never forget you, Jimmy.
Nice cup of coffee.
Just a little stop.
Yeah.
The photo. I'm happy for him.
Yeah, no, it's just funny. I mean, weird year, of course, but the video clip of Jamie doing the Jumbotron shot, like in the room with all the steam and the fog and everything that got leaked, I guess, on social media, wearing all the Georgia uniforms and stuff.
And I think it was one of the other players shot it when they were doing it that day. That was over. I wasn't in that part of the. I was over doing the green screen stuff, so I didn't see that. We used to worry about all that stuff leaking, but.
Yeah.
We don't really worry about that
image
that
now. Like, is we don't like want, Brett Favre we don't wearing want... a Falcons jersey.
Really rare, right?
I got so much call over the year because we shot one practice this year that we were allowed to do video of that we were allowed to give video to outside entities this year, and that one practice. I believe it was the day before Jamie Newman opted out.
No.
And so everybody called looking for video. And then when he opted out, then it was everybody called for looking for JT video. And we were like, nope, don't have any. Sorry, you got to wait till he gets in a game.
Yep.
That's crazy.
You're going to have to wait a while.
Yep. But could I interest you in some Jamie Newman green screen footage?
That's what I can use just later on. They're coming handy.
Could put him into a Marvel movie.
Dude, I saw Watch the shot of Samuel L. Jackson. One of the scenes from the films talking about the green screens. And it's a shot where he's like sitting in a room with a window behind him and he's got like a gun in his lap or something. The entire thing is a green screen. His gun is a green screen. Yeah. The wall behind him.
Oh,
like,
damn.
Yeah.
The window is a green screen.
I saw one where they shot it down in Peachtree City.
Yeah.
His gun and was used, a green. Used, what?
It yeah, was
I used
like
to
a
drive back and forth behind there, and you'd see these giant green walls. And then I saw in one of the Avengers, they basically had two buildings that faced each other.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did was they made the front of those buildings up to look like a New York City street. And then everything else was just green. And it was just some dude put it in later. And I mean, I know how much they use green screen. But now, these days, they use it for everything.
Yeah. Wow.
They don't like the weather? Yeah, we'll just make a green screen.
Yep.
What? That hill's in the wrong place, green screen.
I didn't know that. I didn't know they use them that much in the movies. I know they use them from here and there, but like, whew.
Yeah, like the gun he was holding.
I mean,
like
they're putting fake actors in there now.
Wow. I didn't know they can use it for like a gun or something. That's crazy.
Yeah, it was like a piece of PVC pipe, and they put like some green dots on it, and they turned it into a pistol.
It was his lightsaber.
Yeah. You know, you bring up the
his lightsaber.
You bring up
Mace Windu, baby.
Might have been when he was doing the movie Glass. You ever seen Glass?
Oh yeah,
like a wheelchair in that one.
Yeah,
that wasn't as good as the first one.
No, no. Nowhere near as good.
That was set in Philly. Unbreakable. M. Night Shyamalan.
Oh yeah.
So you bring up they shot that in my grandmother's neighborhood in Philadelphia.
For real?
It's raw. You can tell it's in Philly.
Yeah. You know when his kid is playing in the park with his buddies?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That park is down the street from the house where my dad grew up, and he remembers playing in it when he was a kid.
Holy smokes.
What? Dang.
I like when they shoot things in the cities that they're set in. Like, you bring up the fact that they make these skyscrapers in Peachtree City look like they're in New York. Like, let's just have a superhero that's based in Atlanta. What's wrong with that? It drives me nuts.
I feel like there should be somebody that's based in Atlanta.
We deserve better.
Like, so, like, some sort of outcast derived superhero. Instead of Andre 3000, it's Andre 3 million.
Can do all kind of things.
I'd watch.
I am 3 million. 3 million.
Who gets drafted first? Which dog gets drafted first next year?
Oh my goodness. Seriously?
Oh, I am not going down that road.
The not too early draft.
No, it's too early. It's too early.
The shock and ship mock draft.
It's too early. I gotta look at the tape.
Okay.
JT.
Gotta look at the film. Gotta get the tape back.
Who else we got? Oh, who else we got? Oh, man. Bunch of guys, man. You know, I like JT off the rip, man. JT going to put up these doo-doo monster numbers.
He is.
People going to be like, this dude is number one. He going to take over Sam Howell at North Carolina, all them dudes. He going to be a monster.
Well, I saw PFF had their, like, right top there, five, and JT wasn't even in it. Top five quarterbacks, and JT wasn't even in it. So
really?
Yeah.
Really?
Bulletin board material, man.
Oh, yeah, Matt Corral in it?
No. I don't
think
they did.
Matt Jones, third pick.
Yeah.
All right, Wes, let's go to break.
All right, more Shock and Ship coming up after this. Richard Johnson of the SEC Network will be with us.
Richard.
Welcome back into Shock and Ship. Richard Johnson at RJ underscore Wrights of the SEC Network, Split Zone Duo. That's where you know him from. Joining Shock and Ship this evening as we record on Cinco de Mayo. Richard, how are you, man?
I'm doing good. As soon as I get off of this show, this fine program, I got a Corona with my name on it in the lime sitting right there in my kitchen.
Talk to me, Rich. You talk at my leg. I'm trying to tell these boys that I make a shock reader that will blow your socks off. So as soon as we get off, my wife and my neighbors, they all waiting for my shock reader. So get that Corona.
We need to know what's in the shock reader.
Can't let you know, Mike. If I let you know,
I don't know if I want to know.
Yes. Premium Georgia donors hey, will find the shock reader in the hitter club suites quitter. This fall.
One hitter quitter. That's what I call them. You don't need but one, baby. Hey, Rich. Hey, we appreciate you coming on, bro. Obviously, as a Gator, we wish you nothing but bad things. No, I'm just playing. hey, you based out of Brooklyn. I saw that. Are you you're a big Brooklyn Nets fan? What you think about your Brooklyn boys? You think they can get it done this year? I mean, can the big three stay healthy?
So I will probably have to bandwagon them hard once the playoffs start. I am not a regular season basketball guy of any sort, but I will watch it in the playoffs. So I will adopt the hometown team for now during the playoffs. Apparently they're pretty good. I don't know. Blake Griffin's not playing. I don't know what's going on. I got to catch up once the playoffs
Brooklyn!
Start. Kyrie's that's, out here wilding.
That's what I'm like during the regular. I'm like, now which team is Jordan on now? Dude, he's been out of the league for like 20 years. Okay. All right. Lakers. Sure.
Bro, I just want you to be like, yo, what's up, son? One time, Brooklyn. In the house.
Hey, yo, son.
Hey, yo.
Dead ass, son.
There we go,
my guy.
Dead ass, son. That's what I like right there. Hey, yo, son. Hey, Wes.
I got my Timbs in the other room, B.
Hey, Wes, he's dead ass, son. Don't be playing with him, son.
I know. Shock guys, does this so, to everybody. So DMX's
funeral. DMX's funeral was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
DMX's funeral was 2 weeks ago, and they, I guess the Rough Riders, escorted the coffin all the way from White Plains to the Barclays Center, which is actually where the Nets play.
Yeah.
So I lived across the street from a gas station, and I swear that's where they met after the funeral to plan whatever the next move. Because I look outside, and the whole gas station parking lot is full of guys on ATVs,
bikes,
and dirt bikes. Ready to go wherever they're about to go after that.
Didn't they put his casket on a monster truck of some sort?
Yeah.
Yes. Wow. Yes.
That's
on a monster
wanna
truck and drove it all the way from White Plains, which is north of the Bronx, the length of Manhattan, and into Brooklyn.
That's what I want to go. Special. I want to go out on a monster.
Rough ride now.
You finna ride on somebody, B. You better get right. Better ride on them, B.
I know.
Man, this is the best.
Well, thanks for coming on our DMX podcast.
This is the best guest intro I think we've had yet, man. Right out of the gate.
Bro. Richard. I love dudes from New York, bro. I just love the how they talk, son.
Yeah. Who do you know from New York?
Richard, are you from New York or you just live there?
No, so I am not only a University of Florida graduate, I am from Gainesville. Mm. I didn't live anywhere else other than Gainesville until I was 23. Grown, raised, born, and then went to school there. I left Florida for Bristol, Connecticut for a year. I was working for ESPN had a cup of coffee at ESPN, and then moved over to Brooklyn almost 4 years ago now, and haven't looked back.
Okay, so that explains the SEC.
Much just like Bristol.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so cup of coffee, we call that around here, we call that the Jamie Newman.
That is AKA.
He had a shot. He had an espresso shot. Yeah.
So Richard, you grow up in SEC country and you learn what it means to be a Florida Gator. I assume you got to see some pretty damn good Florida moments. What's your what are you thinking now? What's the direction of the Gator program? I mean, they got the win over Georgia. What do you think it means for the rivalry as a whole right now?
Rich, you was a little too excited about that, Rich.
Where's this SEC East showdown going? Sheesh.
Look, man, I was weaned on making sure DJ Shockley had a bad time the last week in October in Jacksonville. Those are my formative days. No. I think Florida had to get it last year. If they weren't going to get it last year, it was going to be a problem. If they couldn't beat Stetson Bennett at quarterback, you got a problem. And God love the young man, but you can't beat that Georgia team, that Georgia offense, you have a problem. And I think Dan Mullen would have had a very serious problem. So I guess they evened the scale, so to speak. They at least got one last year. But as far as what next year looks like, or this year looks like, 2021, I think it's sort of an unknown. You lose the talent that you lose in the wide receiving core, not just Pitts and Tony, but also Trevon Grimes. Yeah. So the wide receiver core is going to look fundamentally different. The offense is going to look fundamentally different. The last 2 years, they have had a guy in Kyle, or a year and a half, they've had a guy in Kyle Trask who just get the ball to the right place, right? Yeah. Get it to Kyle, get it to Kadarius. They'll make it happen. Now this offense is going to look very different with either Emory Jones or Anthony Richardson. So I think you're going to see something that's going to resemble what you would expect from Dan Mullen based on what it was at Mississippi State with Dak and et cetera, et cetera. So I think I'm excited just to see what form the offense is going to take. I'm somebody who in the modern college game doesn't necessarily believe too strongly in defense anyway, which is a very Gator-centric view of the sport anyway. So we'll see what the defense does. I tend to think Todd Grantham was not as much of a problem as I think people wanted to pin their struggles last year on defense on him. I think they had... Yeah, I know. But I think they ran into the problem of just having DBs that weren't good enough.
Yeah.
And if they can get a little bit more out of the secondary, I think the defense can be good enough and can be a little bit less embarrassing than it was at points last season.
Rich, let me ask you. You talked about Emory Jones possibly being the guy. Do you think Emory Jones and Dan Mullen will have the offense that you think can be successful to win and win the East period? Because I know you've had a chance to see him enough over this, you know, couple years that he's played sparingly here and there. But can he be that three-down guy that can win games for you?
I think so. I think people are going to be a little surprised at how well he throws the ball. If you go in, he came in for Kyle Trask against Auburn.
Threw it well.
In 2019.
Threw it well.
Yes, yeah. Kyle Trask got hurt. Emory Jones came in, and he led a few drives. Then he led a scoring drive. He threw the ball well. I think people are going to be a little bit surprised with how well he throws the ball and how he can – how that part of the offense I don't think is going away or dropping off or anything like that as far as the quarterback is concerned. Now, who he will be throwing to is a different story. We'll figure that out. Figure that out the first weekend of September. I'm impressed with Emory and how he throws the ball.
Yeah, I remember – his high school senior year, you know, he was overshadowed slightly by Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence, other guys in the state of Georgia. He was coming out of Heard County.
Just a little bit. And like,
no one really heard much about, no pun intended. I hate that I just said that. No one had heard much of Heard County. And, you know, he was lost in that spotlight a little bit, but he has a cannon.
Yeah, I think he's a guy where it's sort of that classic Dan Mullen thing, right? Dan Mullen takes a sort of unheralded quarterback you haven't really heard of, and gets he gets the most out of him. I think that is what that is something that Dan and Dan's staff, particularly on offense, has been able to do that Florida had not done since Urban Meyer was there, and Urban Meyer left 2009-2010. He has been able to get the most out of the talent on the roster on offense. He's been able to retrofit that offense in various ways. Again, he did not inherit recruit Kyle Pitts, obviously, and Kadarius Toney. Now, that's a hell of a thing to inherit. Those are guys who are really nice to inherit when you walk into a job. But you know, I've said that the offense the last couple years was sort of retrofitted with parts that weren't his. But obviously, they made the most out of him, particularly last year, and they got close to really having a breakthrough there and potentially even making some playoff noise. But as far as what is going to go in the future, it's going to be more sort of Dan Mullen's guys and all that kind of stuff. And I think we're really going to see not only Dan Mullen's development, talent development, but Dan Mullen and that staff's talent acquisition.
Rich, let me kind of switch points here and kind of talk about you and your journey. Obviously, you've done writing. You've been behind the screen, the TV now, and now you get a chance to be on front and center of the screen with Thinking Out Loud. Obviously, you know Spencer really well. Then you got to be around our boy Brandon Boykin, this season. But what's been the toughest thing for you when you had to make that transition from, okay, now I'm in front of the screen? Because I say that to say, when I first started doing games or first started to talk about the game, the toughest part for me was simplifying it for people who you think who may not know as much. Like, I couldn't talk about one rat. I couldn't talk about what a 5 or 9 technique without explaining. What was the toughest part for you going into that mode of, okay, now I'm on a really big show and Thinking Out Loud. I got 2 other guys with me. What was the toughest part for you going into their role?
Yeah, I think the distilling of information, DJ, like you're talking about, is hard.
The what? What did you say? The what?
That
no.
Distilling information down, boiling it down.
Keeping it simple, man. DJ. Keeping it simple.
I think that one of the things that sort of benefited me was I try to do as much scheme talk as I can on my podcast.
Right.
And so we have a running joke on my podcast, Split Zone Duo, that podcasting is a visual medium. and so, you know, you try to, as best you can, paint a mental picture in somebody's head. I think what I've realized doing scheme content particularly is that people may not be able to put a name to what they're seeing, but they are seeing
it. Right.
Like, if you watch enough football through the years, you've seen mesh.
Right.
Like, you may not know what mesh is,
right,
but you have seen
right
it. Like, you don't know, you might not know what a wheel route is, but you know that Florida used
it. Oh, I do.
To Georgia fans know what
they are. Yeah,
there it is. Whoa. Richard, your connection.
I'm sure now your
connection about to be done.
Is.
That's another shot right there. Because we could not cover a wheel route to save our life.
My challenge and sort of the thing that really gets me out of bed when I talk about football to sort of the common fan in air quotes is to just put a name to the thing that they're seeing, and understand that even though I am interested in the game a certain amount of levels deep, you know, I have been learning about like run fits and double rotation in how you set your front and your coverage. Mm-hmm. That's not necessarily stuff I'm going to be talking about on Thinking Out Loud this fall, right, because it is really deep. Like, I don't even get that stuff. There's defensive coaches that don't even understand that stuff. But I think when you go deep into the game, you find the things that are accessible. And it's a trial and error process. I mean, our producer, our production staff at Thinking Out Loud, I mean, Pete Waters has written emails that are longer than some long-form journalism articles I've written that are sort of grading and giving me feedback on how some of our segments went. And Brandon Boykin, our boy, has been a great resource for me on the show during our first season to sort of bounce ideas off of and work with his own expertise and sort of the segments that we did. So it is an ever-evolving challenge, but you learn that people do care about it and people want to know, because at the end of the day, people just want to go to the bar, watch the game, and sound like a scintilla smarter than they were the week before. And I think if you can offer that, you've done your job.
I just want NFL analysts just once to figure out that not every time the quarterback fakes a handoff is it a zone read. Just figure that out. And not every time they change a route is it an RPO.
RPO was the big one.
I swear, I feel like the college guys get it. The pro guys have no idea.
Yeah.
They're still trying to get used to it. They're still trying to, you know, they're still trying to figure out that stuff. And it's funny seeing, like, I didn't used to really like the NFL when I was a kid. Part of it was because the Jaguars were terrible. They still are. Hopefully that's changing very soon. But, I sort of just gravitated more to college football. Now, yeah, that's really easy when Tim Tebow's winning national championships and Heisman
NFL trophies. Tied in Tim
but,
Tebow.
But, you know, the college game... Yes, future Jacksonville tight end Tim Tebow. But watching the college game
the field since 12.
Now and watching the college game now and watching the NFL, you see how the schemes are starting to merge.
Oh, yeah.
And this is really only over the last like 5 or 6 years have you really started to see the connective tissue of how the NFL and the college game sort of are meshing and coming together. It's always going to be different because of the class of athlete that is in the NFL. But seeing the connective tissue and seeing things that are being done in college run at that high level, you really start to learn stuff. And that's why over the last 2 or 3 years, I've sort of gotten back into watching a lot more NFL football than I have, just because it is starting to resemble Saturdays more and more and more. It's starting to be a little bit fun, which I know the NFL's, you're not allowed to say NFL football's fun, but now it's getting a little bit more fun.
I really feel, though, and I think this dates back to Dak Prescott, you know, just the when in his rookie year with the Cowboys and everybody just being quote unquote blown away with how great he was.
Yeah.
And everybody in the SEC was like,
where you been?
Yeah. And I feel like the majority of the innovation in this game, especially on the offensive side of the ball, is coming from the colleges. And probably the innovation on the defensive side of the ball, because, and DJ, don't get offended here, I feel like it's harder. I feel like from the scheme standpoint, it's harder to coach defense than it is to coach offense, because there are more variations to a scheme, and that the 20-hour rule that college kids have works against that. Because, you know, I used to work with a coach who said college football is the least coached brand of football out there because of the 20-hour rule. And so the defenses have to be somewhat simplified, so you can't innovate the same way, but the offenses tend to make more sense, and kids gravitate to the offenses a little bit more, so you can be more complicated and more innovative on the offensive side of the ball. And I don't know if there's a question there. I think I just...
No, but I think you had a lot to say there.
What?
You got a lot... You packed a lot in there. I mean, I was going to say that the RPO of years gone by, the new term that's replacing it is eye candy. Like, you can't watch a broadcast now without hearing about eye candy. And it's like you were saying, Mike, like, you are innovating, you are just dressing up these schemes so much, and everything that happens before the snap, like, that's all you can do. That's the only advantage you really have right now over the defense if you're an offensive coordinator and you're drawing these offensive recruits in, is making it fun. How do you make it fun? You put up points. The way to put up points right now is by doing a whole hell of a lot before the ball ever gets snapped.
Well, Wes, I...
But remember...
Go ahead, Rich. Go ahead.
The other part of this is... The other part of this is the rules of the game are literally...
Yeah.
Put the defense at a disadvantage before we snap the ball. Like, the one thing, and I've been evangelizing this, the one thing that has got to happen in college football is a reduction of how far offensive linemen can get past the line of scrimmage on an RPO play, on a pass play. You can see anywhere from the rule is from 3 to 5. But DJ, I know you've been watching film and you've seen offensive linemen. You've seen offensive linemen 6, 7, 8 yards down the field, and the ball's still in the quarterback's hand and it goes out. It's literally not fair. That doesn't even get near the fact you can't tackle anybody. I was listening to a Mike Gundy coaching clinic. Mike Gundy obviously is an offensive guy, and he was like, I don't know how you coach defense right now. Because of the strike zone and how that strike zone changes and all that sort of stuff, and the pass interference stuff and the defensive holding stuff and all that sort of stuff. The deck is stacked against defenders. And now look, everybody loves offense. Everybody loves a fun game. But the deck is stacked against defenders and defensive coaches and defenses in general. And we've got to recalibrate the game a little bit. I don't think 12-7 final scores are ever coming back.
Yeah.
But I do think we need to get a little bit back to where we were 10-15 years ago. I do think the game's a little bit too far gone, tilted towards the offense right now with how the rules
Rich,
are set.
Rich, here's something to – if a common fan is wondering about when linemen in that RPO part of the game that they – you have to focus on is – when the referees, you know, there's referees, there's ones in the box, there's ones that's watching behind the quarterback, they're in certain spots of the field, they're only watching certain things. So let's say you're the judge right there behind where the linebackers are, and they're looking at the offensive linemen. When they're looking at those offensive linemen and they come off, they're looking primarily nothing but at that offensive lineman.
They forget them. So
if a quarterback sticks the ball in his gut, and then you see the offensive lineman come off the ball, they're not looking at the quarterback to see, does he still have the ball? Is he throwing it? Is it out of his hand yet? And then by the time he throws it, and then if the lineman is 5, 6 yards down the field, they don't know if that ball came out earlier. They don't know if it came out, if it just came out. So they just hold the flag. So that's a big part of also how offenses win, because they know that these referees are looking at certain things. They're not looking at the entire picture of everything, which makes it tough, too.
Yeah, and the rule in the NFL, I think, is 2 yards. And I think it's a hard cap at 2 yards before you're ineligible man downfield. But in college, it's fudge 3 to 5 yards.
Yeah. No doubt.
Dude, we had a game this year. Dude was 10 yards downfield, and nobody called. I'm not going to say who it was, but guy was 10 yards downfield and got away with it.
I'll never forget it. I was watching, like I said, I'm a Jags fan. I was watching Trevor Lawrence film, and they played A&M a couple years ago at Clemson. And there is an offense – A&M has the ball, and there's an offensive lineman, I kid you not, 12 yards down the line of scrimmage, and the ball is still in Kellen Mond's hand. I'll never forget it. I have it screenshotted on my computer.
Oh, man. Hey, Rich, I want to ask you about – obviously, I had to do my research, and I went back, and then I saw this Twitter profile picture that you have. And I said, this guy must know Nino Brown, and he must be a part of the Cash Money Brothers, because I thought he absolutely like one of the guys in New Jack City. What's up with Am I My Brother's Keeper profile, bitch? I mean, I like it. It's cool. I'm just messing with you, bro.
That is a skit I did for a friend who actually went to Georgia and was a member of the Spike Squad.
Oh, for real?
When he was a student. Yeah, he's one of my best friends, nice. And he does sketch comedy up here.
Nice.
And I was in a skit with him, and that is the picture.
I gotta pull this up.
That is cool.
I want to ask you about your biscuit recipe.
Hey, listen, Alex McDaniel.
Who, you know how many times I had to screenshot that Insta story, man?
Hey, I'm out here.
Hey, Rich, I saw this. Now I got the hook up. Yeah, I saw this biscuit. I remember Alex retweeting this. Okay. Let's hear it.
Can you say biscuit around Boykin? Can you use
Boykin can't hear
biscuit around Boykin, right?
Boykin can't hear wheat, man.
He can't even hear it eat that.
Flour. Right? No.
He got like 0.5% body fat.
Dude is a walking cramp. We call him that, yeah. All right, talk to us about this biscuit recipe. What's up with it?
So it is in a very long email from Alex McDaniel. It is saved on my computer. I have not made them in far too long. The key is the flour. So up here, because I'm a Yankee these days, it's hard for me to get white lily flour. So I think I got it shipped to me from a friend. I got white lily flour, and also the key is to make all of your materials in the freezer about an hour before you go. Everything got to be cold, right? Because you don't want to melt the butter in any of the batter, anything that you're trying to do, because you don't want to get that butter melted. But yeah, the biscuit recipe, I need to get back on now. It's been a while since
I've made how do you do, butter. And I excuse my ignorance because it's been a while since I looked at it, but how do you do the butter? Because I hear all these stories about what you have to do to the butter. And some people are like, well, you use a cheese grater. Some people are like, no, you use a potato ricer. Do you do anything special to the butter to break it up while it's still cold to where it goes a little bit more evenly through the batter?
Yeah, I actually just dice it into as small pieces as possible, and then I put it back in the fridge, right? You got to put it back in the fridge to get it back down, I guess, to a cooler temperature. It's at room temperature or near it, obviously, when it's out of the fridge. So you stick it back in the fridge for a little bit. Everything's got to be cold. Biscuit cutter, cold. Knife, cold. Everything cold.
Huh.
This is some attention to detail, which I'm not familiar with cooking. Speaking as guy who throws big dumb dead animal on the grill and lets it smoke for a couple hours.
Yeah, Rich, don't believe this dude. This dude's got a encyclopedia worth of directions for how to grill certain things. So yeah, the dude is detailed. I'm back.
Finally, for the first time in 4 years, I have an outside and I have a grill in my New York apartment. Okay. So I am getting back into smoker game, grilling game.
Bring
just
some
like it's
real barbecue.
Imagine living.
Like it
was. I can't imagine.
Yes. Oh, y'all would not believe the barbecue here. And I'm not saying it's good. It is way too expensive. I mean, I'll go and spend $35 on a barbecue plate that I could get in a gas station parking lot for $7.50.
True.
Just slap some pork on the plate and put it between two pieces of bread. We'll call it
Come on, Brooklyn.
But here it's got to be all artisan and all this sort of stuff. And I got to go out of my way for it. Nah.
Brooklyn.
I love it for the – we're about time now for the annual like New York Times New York City barbecue recipe where they put it out there and everybody just roasts the hell out of them on Twitter again.
It's that same image of like
it's
the metal
like
tray.
Texas politician brisket.
It looks like Lincoln Riley's brisket. Has the butcher paper down. Oh. It's got like two pickles, three slices of brisket, and like some red onions. I'm like, all right, sure. Go for a piece of toast.
And no smoke ring. No smoke ring to be
found. I love it. I'm glad you're up there. I'm glad you're up there, Richard. It makes me feel better. It's going to help me sleep better at night.
Rich, before we let you get out of here, bro, we got to ask you about our dogs. Did you see the spring? I know you had a chance to watch some of the spring game. Impressions of the dogs of 2021.
Well, all the doggone receivers are hurt, so I don't know what the deal is. I was sitting here saying Georgia's offense is going to look this, that, and the third, and now he ain't got nobody to throw to. But I'm interested in what this JT Daniels offense is going to look like and continue to look like. Like, I don't care who they played at the back end of last season, who was on the schedule after that Florida game. They were outstanding. Yeah. Like, you can't sit here and say they weren't absolutely outstanding. But JT Daniels makes throws in, I think it was probably the Carolina game. I can't remember one of those games late in the season. Or was like, I mean, those are some Sunday throws that young man is pulling off.
You can, to an extent. It's only May.
You can, to an extent, trust what you've seen with that Georgia offense to the back end of last season. I think, and they did not reinvent the wheel when JT Daniels came in. I think they were trying to do a lot of those concepts, particularly in the vertical passing game, in the beginning of the season. They just didn't have the guys under center, behind center, that could pull that off. I mean,
They also didn't have a spring, too. Right.
Yes. I mean, look, you look at the second half of the Florida game. Georgia, I'm not going to sit here and say it was close because of what the final score ended up, but there was an opportunity for a better quarterback to hit some throws in that game and bring Georgia back.
No doubt.
You start scoring some points. Kyle Trask actually ends up throwing that pick six, which was dropped by the defensive lineman, and it goes back the other way for 6 points. That's a different football game. So look, Georgia's defense is, in my opinion, always going to be, now I think when I say good, people want to think shutout. You got to take that out of your mind. That's not how defensive football is.
You know, I think Kirby did a good job of talking about that this year. It's just like, look, those days are over. We need to adjust. Exactly. We need to adjust the expectations. Not to jump in on there, but I agree with you 100%.
No, and I'm glad Kirby's actually said it, because I know Nick has said it too. Nick is just like, those days are over. It's not coming back. So can I hold an opponent under 30 points? Can I hold Florida under 30 points and Clemson under 30 points? Can I do that? Because if I can do that, you'd probably feel good about that offense scoring over 30 points, which I know is hard to hear for Georgia fans who have watched that offense since Chubb and Michelle left, since the Rose Bowl year. Just have a defense that's good enough and build it around the offense, which is what I think they tried to do last year, and it didn't work out for myriad reasons. But yeah, I'm very, very high on Georgia coming into this season. And I mean, you guys can decide for yourselves whether this is a bit and I'm pumping up Georgia for the end of October in Jacksonville when Florida takes them down yet again. But that's for y'all to decide.
Weird things happen in Jacksonville.
Since you're a Gainesville guy, are you a fan of candy corn?
What kind of...
I am not. I'm not a big candy guy in any way, shape, or form. No candy.
You the man, Rich.
You're gonna ride this horse. I think this thing's played out now, DJ. The candy
ain't no way.
Thing.
Ain't no way.
It's over,
ain't no
man.
Way.
Just
ain't no way.
Let it go.
Hey, Rich. Little story behind this is the reason I asked you. You see the disgust on these other two guys' face on here, because way back in Halloween, these guys went to the freaking bank on candy corn, how good it is. They love it. So every guy we come on, I try to sneak this in here some way or another. And 95% of the time, everybody's like, I hate candy corn.
Yeah.
So I'm always a winner.
Yeah, funny thing disgusting. Is, Mike edits this out every single
face.
Week.
Look at their face.
Shock doesn't even know it.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, as the guy that edits the show for like 100 episodes, it's been nothing but candy corn love.
Oh, man.
So people
hilarious.
Coming up to DJ and like Public's like, I know you love candy corn, DJ.
That's great, man.
DJ's missed me with that.
Well, hey, Richard Johnson,
hey,
thank you so much, man.
Rick, we appreciate you, bro.
We can find you on the Shutdown Fullcast and RJ_writes on Twitter. What else do you have going on? Where else can people access your work and keep up with you?
The Moon Crew.
Those are the Moon Crew. Look, I'm spread way too thin. The main hubs are RJ_writes on Twitter and my podcast, Split Zone Duo. I do pop on Shutdown Fullcast from time to time and hang out with them and those jokers. But those are the main places. And, of course, this fall, hopefully once again on SEC Network's Monday night, Thinking Out Loud. We have a lot of fun on that show, and I'm excited to hopefully do another season with them.
You never know.
Those
bro.
Are the main
you
hubs.
Know. You never know if you... You never know if you're coming back. You never know. It's just how it is. Bro, trust me. I know.
Your words, not mine. Your words. You got the tenure. I ain't got the tenure. I only did one season.
Rich, appreciate you, bro.
Thank you so much. Enjoy it.
Thanks,
guys. Y'all have a great week. We'll catch you next time. Make sure you subscribe, download the show, leave Shock and I a comment in the comments. Leave us something nice. I think
Shock read a time,
I think we've earned it. Y'all have a good week. We'll catch you next time.